So, testing, is this working? Sound working? Thanks, James. It's good to see you. Good to see you folks here this evening. Welcome.
Recording in progress.
Yeah. So it's time to get settled, and my guess is that most, if not all of you, are already kind of getting settled into your meditation spots. But I welcome you to just find a comfortable position to settle into here for about 35 minutes and to take this opportunity to really partake in the wonderful chance to practice in a group, to come together as Sangha, to connect. And in welcoming, I'd like to just say at the beginning that PIMC and I are committed to making this exploration of the Dharma and these practices as relevant and accessible as possible. So it's really important to me to extend a welcome invitation to all of you folks here this evening, both folks on Zoom, folks on Facebook, and to welcome all people of every age, ethnicity, race, cultural heritage, religious background, socioeconomic group, ability, sexual orientation, gender identity, ability. So you're all welcome. We're all welcome. We all belong. And so to start with this this attitude of welcoming this mind and this body into a full experience of the present, setting aside preoccupations, cares, trance states, anything that kind of pulls us out of what's actually happening in this moment, and to really partake and feast on the bounty of sensations that are here that beckon us back to our true nature, which is awake and present and accepting of this moment, just as it is, this life, this experience. And the access portal is so intimate and close. It's right here with this breath It's right here with these points of contact. This body sitting and noticing those sensations is a wonderful opportunity to deepen into presence. And for some, it's really easy to accept that invitation and center in that experience, whatever the most predominant physical experience might be, to really kind of let our awareness coalesce around that. Sometimes it's pretty challenging. So important to be patient and accepting as we hold this intention. And it can make it a little easier to be present in these bodies if we attend. In the beginning, it's easy to forget what we know about sitting with ease and sitting in a posture that supports being alert, being awake. So let's give that just a few moments here of attention to see, yeah, if there's a way that the body posture can really reflect this intention of being present, being alert, without being overly stiff or constricted. And to check in and see if there's places where there might be an over constriction, or perhaps where we're trying to hold something unconsciously, that consciously we may be able to bring some ease or soften, perhaps in the neck or shoulders, a place where a lot of us hold tension. Sometimes it's, yeah, it could be any place. It might be the chest, diaphragm, belly. So just bringing some kind and attentive presence and seeing if it's possible to let things just both soften and be alert. And letting the breath assist us in this. The breath is a wonderful conduit to relaxation. And we can use it intentionally by just accentuating the breath, letting the breath deepen maybe for a few consecutive breaths. Diaphragmatic breathing can really bring in that state of relaxation a little bit more. And can also help us remember what the breath feels like. There's a kinesthetic memory. This is what it feels like within this body. And as we let the breath just be natural, just breathe itself, we can perhaps find some part of this experience of in-breathing and out-breathing that really works for us as a present moment reference point. And if that doesn't, for some reason, really work for you because it's too subtle or elusive, you could work with just noticing perhaps the sensation of the breath at the tip of the nostrils, and maybe as you breathe in, note to yourself silently in. When you breathe out, just note silently out, or put a hand on the belly or the chest. And the context for this practice is really to remember that we can take refuge in this capacity to be alert, to be awake, and that we can take refuge in the direct experience of what we discover, that we discover for ourselves what's true, and that we can directly experience our interconnectedness just simply with the breath. The breath connects us to life on this planet and to all beings who breathe and our plant friends that produce the oxygen that we breathe. And practicing with the breath as a primary object, we enter the stream of practice that goes back some 2600 years. The Anapanasati Sutta goes back to the time of the Buddha. That's the sutta on the mindfulness of breathing. So this breath, it can be the starting point of discovering refuge, or these body sensations can be the place that helps us to remember our true nature. And in the context of a supportive community that perhaps can help us remember to, in all things, bring kindness. In all practices are based on compassion, kindness, and acceptance of this moment being exactly as it is. And our theme this evening and focus is practicing with skillful effort or wise effort. And in this practice, the primary aspect of that, first and foremost, is to bring the mind back into the present moment, to the primary object. And that could be the breath. It could be some other physical sensation that's stable. It's present moment reference point. And part of the skillfulness of the effort is that it's done in a way that's non-coercive, it's non-judgmental, that's accepting, of course, this moment is like this, So it isn't getting involved in any kind of interdisciplinary action if the mind wanders. It's actually seeing that as an opportunity for waking up. And remembering that there's a body that sits and breathes. some practice is effortless. There's just a sense of ease, and the mind stays naturally with what's most present, with what's uppermost in consciousness. And on the other end of the continuum, and sometimes it's very challenging to even have a moment of presence and recognition with perhaps times of agitation or sleepy dullness or other kinds of really difficult states, physical pain. And so the invitation is to be first and foremost accepting this moment is like this. Sometimes it takes effort to just kind of bear witness to what might be really challenging. And other times we're just riding the flow of awareness. And there's, of course, all of the different possibilities in between. And so the recognition of what the conditions are that we find in this body and mind in the present moment is partly what determines what's skillful in terms of effort. If we try too hard to stay with the breath, we can constrict, tense up, and that isn't really helpful. If the body tightens up and there's going to be likely more discomfort. And on the other hand, if we don't bring enough kind of intention to notice this moment, this breath, then get lost in dispersion, in the habitual conditioning and momentum of the mind running its course without noticing. So it's that balance point that we're practicing towards. and part of skillful effort is recognizing states of consciousness or mental states that are conducive to meditation, deepening, and awakening, and to notice states that are described by the Buddha as hindrances or challenging to work with. So the recognition of these states is beneficial so that they don't need to hinder or impede our spiritual deepening. And on the other hand, if they are conducive to recognize them, can strengthen them, can help them become more stable as we recognize. So just a reminder, a brief reminder in case it's helpful, that if you notice there's a lot of kind of a mind colored with aversion or longing or craving or disturbed by anxiety or sloth and torpor or doubt, dispiritedness, those are very common, come up in meditation, and those are the five hindrances, basically. And to recognize them in the present moment with mindfulness is skillful practice, a way of starting to experience some freedom or space around them, non-identification. It's like, oh, instead of I'm restless and agitated, it's, oh, there's the restlessness, there's the agitation. That's what it feels like in the body. And so there starts to be an object of mindfulness that is then a part of the meditation instead of an obstacle. And on the other hand, we can notice a mind that's colored or influenced by equanimity. It's like really balanced and non-reactive. We can notice a mind that's tranquil. Yeah, we can notice a mind that's got energy and curiosity or investigation, where mindfulness is strong. And there might be some joy. So, yeah, to notice those conducive states is also right effort. The effort to sustain and deepen, and the effort to work with the hindrances that are then transformed into the great composting elements that we use as fertile ground for our awakening. Yeah, so just a reminder to stay present, even though the bell has rung and we're transitioning into the rest of our evening together. We can take these qualities of presence and kindness, curiosity, into our sitting form once again. And if there's any places where there's an urge to stretch or move or adjust, we can take that as an invitation to do mindful movement, notice, presence. With that, and there's five senses and the mind to be mindful of in any given moment. So is there more focus in the body in this moment? Or maybe it's more sound, hearing that's happening. Or maybe we're more aware of the visual field. Yeah, so, or it could be another, maybe the sense of smell is really pronounced in your location. So just noticing, being present. So I have some brief reminders and announcements to share with you this evening. There's some upcoming classes and retreats and events at PIMC coming up this week, actually. Tomorrow, on the 15th, Candle Summers is offering the Women's Restoration and Rejuvenation Circle from 6:30 to 8:30. That's offered online through PIMC. And then the Sunday Insight in Metta is coming up on this coming Sunday, that's the 17th at 6:30. There's guest teachers, teacher trainees from the PIMC teacher trainee group, Mish Makazi and Paula Bogger. And so that's happening. And then coming up on the 23rd of September, that's Saturday, there's a retreat with Robert Beattie and Ruth and Roberts and Betsy Toole. That's going to be from 9 to 4:30, and that's an in-person. And then coming up on the following Thursday, the 28th, I'll be starting the series Basics of Mindfulness, an opportunity to kind of circle back to the basics and really deepen and establish a regular meditation practice. So that's going to be at 6 o'clock starting the 28th. It goes for 6 weeks. So those are a few things coming up this month. And then just a reminder that we operate on the practice of Dana, which is the practice of we get to choose what we'd like to share to support these teachings. There is no charge. There's just your heart that's in charge of what it feels like it would like to share or give in order to support PIMC. So I posted in the chat a link to that virtual Dana Bowl, if you'd like to check that out. Or if you're tuning in on Facebook, you can go to PortlandInsight.org to make. I think there actually is a link on Facebook as well for making a donation. And also for folks tuning in, if you're tuning in for the first time, you can be on my email list for announcements about Heart of Freedom and other things that I'm doing. So you could just send an email to me, douglasbullen.com, and I'll add you to that contact list. So I'd love to hear from our community this evening if there's sharing that would like to happen. Of course, it's totally optional. So practice is simple, bringing mindful, heartful attention to your own present moment experience to see if there's something that would be helpful to say just about what you're noticing, anything that's coming up. And just a few brief words can sometimes really help to strengthen an awareness or unburden or just weave the web of community. So that's an invitation. And when you're finished sharing, when you start, if you'd say your name, that would be wonderful. Just first name. And then when you're finished, just to say, yep, I've spoken, I'm finished. So the next person who might want to take a turn can do so. And I'll get us started. I am full of just a sense of gratitude and appreciation for being able to offer this. It's such an honor and a privilege to play this role. So thank you.
I'm Michelle Knight, and I am grateful to be here, and a little bit sleepy, and a little bit thinking about some of my friends, my aunt in Maine. She's in Matthiasport, which is the northeast part, and all the hurricane stuff that they must be going through there, which seems to be a lot of concern about flooding around that area. I grew up in New England, for 30 years, so it's hard to know people there. Anyways, I've done spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. Well, sensing that there's some space here, so just to double check, anybody on the edge of sharing before we move into the Dharma talk? So this evening, I'm reflecting on and exploring skillful effort or wise effort in the Buddhist teaching. It's one of the folds of the Eightfold Path. It stands out in the Dharma because in this practice, in this tradition, there isn't a divine being who is going to intervene on our behalf and rescue us, that we pray to. There certainly can be devotional practices, but the core message from the Buddha is that we need to cultivate the qualities of heart and mind that lead to freedom, and that no one else can do that for us. So there's this emphasis on personal responsibility for our life trajectory, for our destiny, really. So, and effort is a core aspect of that, right along with mindfulness and the other qualities of heart and mind that the Buddha talked about. So, I know that this is, for probably most of you, going to be a reminder and a recap. So please listen for what you know directly from your own experience and what you can deepen into, or kind of perhaps reinvest in or deepen into as you hear these words. So this effort to be mindful and to bring the mind back when it wanders, so it knows what's happening in the present, is a very deliberate balancing act. Because on the one hand, there is effort that's needed in an attempt to keep paying attention. But on the other hand, there's nothing to do because awareness is already present. We don't have to create awareness. It's at the core of our being. So it's just that we've been distracted. So this quality of effort, this wise effort, isn't striving. Because striving tends to lead to clinging, and it reinforces a sense of self in opposition to the way things are. And that can be very painful. That can really increase our sense of angst. So wise effort isn't really trying to get anything, because there's nothing to get. Spiritually, what we're looking for is already here. We just got distracted from it. We just forgot. We just lost touch with it. So it isn't trying to penetrate something or go deeper and deeper. Rather, it's the effort to listen with greater sensitivity. It's kind of a soft receptivity, and just a surrender, receiving and welcoming whatever is here with curiosity. And when it's really balanced and consistent without any strain, there's no sense of I should do this. There's just a willingness to be present. And it kind of becomes its own reward. It does become its own reward. I'd like to share with you a poem by Dana Faulds. And it's called Allow. There's no controlling life. Try corralling a lightning bolt, containing a tornado, dam a stream and it will create a new channel. Resist and the tide will sweep you off your feet. Practice allowing and grace will carry you to higher ground. The only safety lies in letting it all in. the wild and the weak, fear, fantasies, failures, success. And when loss rips off the doors of your heart, or sadness veils your vision with despair, practice becomes simply bearing the truth. And in the choice to let go of your known way of being, the whole world is revealed to your new eyes.
That kind of the effort to really remain present, to stay present with the vicissitudes, with the ever-changing flow of experience. I shared in the announcement for this week a quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj, who is a Advaita Vedanta master from India. And had this incredible quote that I appreciate and learn something new every time I read it. So I'd like to read it again and share it with you and just invite you to just listen with your heart. What truth can we gain with our practice? Nothing whatsoever, of course. But it is in the nature of truth or love, cosmic consciousness, whatever you want to call it, to express itself, to affirm itself, to overcome difficulties. Once you've understood that the world is love in action, consciousness or love in action, you will look at it quite differently. But first, your attitude towards suffering must change. Suffering is primarily a call for attention, which itself is a movement of love. More than happiness, love wants growth, the widening and deepening of awareness and consciousness and being. Whatever prevents that becomes a cause of pain. And love does not shrink from pain. One of the things that stands out in that quote is the quality of effort is built in. When we really start to get in touch with our experience, he said, suffering is the primary call for attention, which itself is a movement of love. So there's a kind of a synergy that we tap into, that we find in our practice. And so I find it a pretty amazing thing to say that love doesn't shrink from pain. Now I'm talking here about spiritual love. That what it wants is not pleasure, but to go deeper or higher, something that's higher or richer. That's our capacity, our birthright, to return to our true nature. And there's that. And I'd like to share another poem. This is Unconditional by Jennifer Wellwood. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant jewel-like essence. That's another way of talking about skillful effort. I'd like to share with you a little bit of a writing that comes to us from Lama Karma Yeshe Chodron on right effort. Actually, before I do, this will tie into it. He is a Latinx American, and I just want to offer this observation that it really takes a lot of effort to show up for any of us, you know, for ourselves, in the way that we're talking about here. It isn't easy, and it's particularly challenging to join a community of support if we're not in the mainstream in our culture, if we're racially, culturally, sexually, gendered, abled, neurologically different. It can be really challenging. And this week I'm particularly aware of having talked with people who are neurologically diverse, just how hard that is and how much self-compassion it really takes to show up and not judge ourselves when we're struggling with those kinds of things. That's a kind of preface to what Lama Karma Yeshe Chodron is expressing. He said, as a newcomer to Buddhist teachings, I was rather wary of right effort. As a first generation Latinx American, steeped in success overdrive, I'd quite enough of implicit performance standards that exhausted and oppressed. And no matter how hard I strived, I still struggled with pain, grief, and lack of fulfillment. I didn't want a new rule book. I wanted to be happy and not suffer. So hearing the, oh, you got to try harder, hearing effort, like right effort as, oh, yeah, you need to work harder. And it could be really burdensome. It could be a turnoff. You know, that could be a reason among many that people walk out of Dharma centers, because it seems like, yeah, it's already hard enough to be challenged in this culture. Circling back to Lama, he said, luckily, I soon learned that how we respond to our doubts is a crucial point of practice. Engaging the teachings with curiosity, neither dismissing them reactively nor swallowing them indiscriminately, is a vital portal to understanding the Dharma. It breeds receptivity and sharpens penetrating wisdom, or prajna, the precise knowledge that discerns things as they are without ignorance and without projections getting in the way. The resulting open-minded, subtle, supple attitude empowers experiential understanding of the Dharma, starting right where we are. And then over 20 years later, this integrative approach has never failed to revolutionize my practice in marvelous ways. So let's talk a little bit about what the traditional term right effort means. I use wisdom or skillful, because it's often confusing when we hear right. It conjures up So there's a wrong. We get into wrong thinking, and it can be helpful in the beginning to trace the phrase translated as right effort in English to the source in Pali, in the Buddhist language. And it translates from the word sama in Pali, that's S-A-M-M-A, which actually means complete, genuine, in perfect harmony. So instead of right as opposed to wrong, it's more like right on, that phrase from the 1960s. And if we translate the English word effort back into Pali, it means to extend, stretch, exert, train, fathom. So it's interesting. So if we hear it more as genuine, in harmony, restoring something. It's the effort to restore our complete understanding of our true nature, which is awake, loving, present. So that's one thing I wanted to convey. And the other thing is that there's a kind of essential aspect of it, which is to be acting in our practice in a way that brings balance, that fits the situation. So effort should be balanced between trying too hard and not trying hard enough. Like striking the balance between excessive fasting and overindulgence in food. Trying hard to progress too rapidly gets poor results, as also not trying hard enough. So my personal experience is that regular daily practice has served me incredibly well, keeping that thread going. I'm kind of a plotter. Yeah, once I can get a good routine going and I can stick with it, I can make a lot of progress. And so I've done that with meditation. I don't miss a day without sitting. And now it's easy, it's just natural. It's just what happens as part of the flow of life. And along with that, there's this natural reflection on the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path that happens just like I think about what I'm going to do this day. So I share that with you as in kind of an invitation to find what inspires you to keep your practice going, to find that inspiration to bring the effort that's needed to see the results that you're looking for. Because we have the capacity to shape our lives. That's the message from the Buddha. We don't have to leave it up to fate or the conditioning that we absorbed in childhood or from our culture. We can set a destiny. And if we understand that what we attend to and bring effort to grows, gets stronger. So it's a very hopeful teaching. And there was a strong emphasis on it in the Buddhist teaching. The word effort that I was describing is used more than any other word in the Buddhist teaching. If you look at the suttas, it's used more than wisdom, more than nirvana, more than compassion, more than loving kindness. Equanimity is a strong emphasis. And on his deathbed, the Buddha's last words were, "All conditioned things are impermanent. Work out your liberation with diligence." So there it is again. So it's another way of describing effort, skillful effort, is to see the world as it truly is and to act skillfully based on that understanding. To act in accordance with our understanding of interbeing, so we can cause less harm and bring love and compassion to the world and wisdom. Yeah. So wanted to share kind of the core aspects of this before kind of circle back to check in with you folks. So there are four parts to skillful effort the Buddha described. And I mentioned these, at least a couple of them, during the guided meditation. The first is the effort to let go or abandon unskillful habits, resentments, obsessions, addictions, things that don't serve us. So it would be basically the effort to surrender and let go of entrenched behavior that's a source of suffering for us. And so seeing through that, seeing through the attachment to stress-producing thinking or unskillful belief systems, inflated or deflated thoughts, self-judgment, the five hindrances that I mentioned that I went through, just to name a few. The second aspect of a skillful effort is the effort to avoid things that could be unhelpful or unskillful before they happen. To not place ourselves in dangerous situations. To be aware of potential relapse possibilities so that we can act accordingly, skillfully, and not be in denial. To remember the things that we need to remember, to not repeat old patterns that don't serve us, to recognize them when they come up in the mind. People who are in recovery understand the concept of relapse prevention. So that would be an example on that level, but it doesn't have to be a addiction recovery. It could be, I mean, in a sense, we're all addicts. I remember Joseph Goldstein saying this in a Dharma talk. On some level, unless we're a fully awakened being, we all have aspects of our conditioning that are addictive, that we're identified with. And so to try to free ourselves from that. So and then the third of the four aspects of skillful effort is the effort to initiate, to develop, to cultivate what we know is in accordance with our deepest values and beliefs. What does it mean to lead an ethical life, to lead a life that is worth living, that we can respect and appreciate and enjoy? So, and there's some broad categories that the Buddha described, things to attend to for cultivation and development. There's the paramis, there's generosity, practicing generosity, and expressing that, looking for opportunities to express that, a quality of relinquishment, letting go of clinging, the practice of renunciation, giving up intense emotional attachments and compulsive preoccupations, letting go of excessive baggage, psychological, emotional, or physical, through clear seeing, practicing virtue, living a life of honesty and respect, patience, loving kindness, compassion, wisdom. These are all things that we can cultivate and are easier to cultivate when our lives are less under the influence of those unwholesome states. And then finally, last but not least, the fourth aspect is the effort to maintain what we've cultivated. Daily practice, staying with the wholesome, having friends that support us in practice, sangha, spiritual community, listening to Dharma talks, and so those are the things. So like to circle back and check in and see if there's anything that may have come up for you folks that you'd like to share or have questions about as far as wise effort goes. So my teacher, Matt Flickstein, was talking about some of the signs of kind of spiritual deepening or maturity. And one of the things he talked about was how at a certain point, falling back asleep wakes us up. So when there's a moment of mindlessness, that becomes a catalyst for awakening. And if that doesn't make any sense, that's okay. But I just wanted to point out that at a certain point, we start with a kind of maturing of practice. We can notice when we're heading off into forgetting. And the forgetting actually leads to remembering. And meditation practice cultivates that. It's like there's this miraculous thing that's selfless, that awakens in the middle of a wandering trance state. And there's a certain quality of effort that leads to that, that falling asleep wakes me up. Failure, in quotes, making mistakes, in quotes, becomes an opportunity for awakening with skillful effort. So the mind wanders. Yeah. And then there's coming back. There starts to be that we create a groove that tends towards presence, that tends towards being awake and curious and accepting. It's possible. It can happen. It does happen. And important that we practice with kindness and compassion. Just circling back to what I was saying about the challenges that we face in this life, and to not hear right effort as a should, have to, ought to. It's more an invitation to discover the beauty and wonder and peace that is here in each of our hearts and that connects us to each other. So here's a brief meditative reflection that might be helpful. Things to consider, just some questions really. And if you'd like to let your eyes close and just reflect and notice what comes up, particularly important with this one, to not let it slip into self-judgment or commentary or criticism. So yeah, just centering in your heart and noticing what comes up when I ask the question. So where are you making too much effort in your life? Is there any place where there's too much striving? And then to notice what comes up, if anything, in response to the question, where do you make too little effort? Where it's just kind of running on habit, energy, or conditioning, or kind of addictive tendencies. And then to reflect on the question, where is your life too internal, where we shy away from connection? And then to reflect on the question, where is life too external, not enough internal time or connection with this heart and mind? And also important to notice those times and remember those times when it feels like there's really a balance, a flow. When it's just clear, oh, this is next. This is what's happening. To be aware of, when there's balance there with the effort. And once again, just a reminder, this isn't about fault finding. There's no doing it wrong. there's just working with what's here in the present and using a skillful effort, curiosity. So just to check back again, any last sharing or questions? Okay. So I'd like to share, this is from a book called The Still Forest Pool, and it was written by Jack Kornfield about the teachings of his teacher, Ajahn Chah, who's in the Thai forest tradition. And he had a question for his teacher. I still have many thoughts. My mind wanders a lot, even though I'm trying to be mindful. And Ajahn Chah said, don't worry about this. Just try to keep your mind in the present. Whatever there is that arises in the mind or the heart, just watch it. Let go of it. Don't even wish to be rid of thought. Then the mind will reach a natural state. No discriminating between good and bad, hot and cold, fast and slow. No me, in quotes, and no you, in quotes. No self at all. Just what there is. And when you walk, no need to do anything special. Simply walk and see what there is. No need to go to a cave or cling to isolation. Wherever you are, know yourself by being natural and watching. And if doubts arise, watch them come and go. It's very simple. Hold on to nothing. It's though you're walking down a road. Periodically you run into obstacles. And when you meet difficulties, see them and overcome them by letting go. Don't think about the obstacles you've passed already, and don't worry about the ones you haven't seen yet. Stay in the present. Don't worry about the length of the road or the destination either. Everything is changing. Whatever you passed, don't cling to it, and eventually the mind will reach its natural balance, where practice becomes automatic and effort becomes effortless. All things come and go by themselves. Sitting hours on end is not necessary. Some people think the longer you sit, the wiser you must be. I've seen chickens sit on their nest for days on end. Wisdom comes from being mindful in all postures. Your practice should begin as you awaken in the morning and continue until you fall asleep. What is important is only that you keep aware, whether you're working or sitting or going to the bathroom. And each person has their own natural pace. Some of you will die at 50, some of you at age 65. And some of you at age 90. Don't think about or worry about this. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Your mind will become quieter and quieter in any surroundings, like a still forest pool. All kinds of wonderful, rare animals will come and drink at the pool. You will see clearly the nature of all things in the world. Many wonderful, strange things come and go, but you will be still. This is the happiness of the Buddha. So, my dear friends, like to bring our evening to a close. I have one other brief announcement that I forgot to mention earlier. That's that I will be gone next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks. And next week, there'll be another teacher, one of our new teachers, Trina will be here teaching on Thursday. So I'm delighted for you to have a chance to experience her in this context. And and I'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. So let's close with doing some metta practice. And this is one example of skillful effort, doing metta, a practice of cultivating the good, the effort to initiate, develop, cultivate one of those four aspects of right effort or skillful effort. So just to take a moment and check in with what's present in your life, any places where there's some struggles or challenges, places where it would be useful to be a good friend to yourself. And perhaps imagining if you were being a good friend to yourself in a place where there's challenges or difficulties, and where you tend to be judgmental or self-critical, what would you say? How would you support? What words would you say if you were being a good friend to yourself? Words of encouragement, words of support, words of empathy, compassion. Just noticing what bubbles up. And then to see if there's a kind of a simple phrase that could emerge that you could say, try repeating to yourself here and notice how that feels. Yeah, may I learn to accept myself even when I forget where I put the car keys. That would be a simple, mundane example instead of beating myself up. Or, when I find it difficult to not get angry when my partner says something that's critical. I'm learning to accept myself even when, or be free from anger or fear. So just noticing what it might be for you, see if it's possible for your heart to open to yourself, wishing yourself well, and perhaps using a little repetition with that, letting it radiate throughout your being. And then extending this out in time and space, understanding that whatever it is that we might judge ourselves negatively for is part of our shared human experience. And other beings have similar challenges. And so we can extend our metta out into the world. We can share it with our local community gathered here this evening. Whatever wish of well-being you might want to share, imagining that going out, extending to beings here, our beloved community, and then extending it out to the dear ones in your life, family, friends, maybe co-workers. May all beings experience freedom from all forms of angst and anguish and suffering. and welcoming all beings into a practice of awakening where there's room for all beings to feel belonging and remember that we belong to each other. And I'd like to invite us to close with a simple chant, may all beings be happy. And as we do that, we can imagine sending these wishes out in all directions to all beings. So the practice is may all beings be happy, and it's three times, and then sadhu, which means so be it, three times. And you're welcome to unmute for folks on Zoom. And let's give this a try. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. So do. So do. So do. Thank you. Yeah, so please take whatever's helpful and skillful and wise from our practice this evening and make it your practice or deepen your practice. Anything that's not helpful or not useful, just let it go. So you only take good things. And please take good care of you and your loved ones and be safe and healthy, and I'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Doug.
Welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, folks on Facebook. I wish you well and hope to see you again soon.